Blog Talk Radio.
Woman to woman, songs of life we sing, songs of love and songs of joy, songs of life we bring.
Here we go.
Sing it again. Sing it down low for him.
Sing it down low for him.
LaDon, thank you all for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. And it's, of course, 7 p.m. in California. And we have an awesome, awesome, awesome show for you this evening as we're continuing our series on financial breakthrough. And we have a wonderful guest that's going to help us with one of the American dreams, which is owning a home. Isn't that right, Coach D?
Amen. I'm excited. You know, so many people have their own perceptions of what buying a home is, and generally we are just excited to just want to buy a home. You know, I want to get a home, and the first thing that we normally do is we run out, we contact a real estate agent maybe, we'll go into, you know, Zillow or one of those sites, and we start seeing these homes, and we go to open houses, and we never, you know, we know that there's a funding process, but we really don't fully understand it. And we're going to learn tonight. We're going to really, our special guest on tonight, I believe we're going to get a better sense of what that looks like so that we could be prepared to meet the lender. Prepared to meet the lender. So I am really excited about our guest on tonight.
Amen. 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 You know, another thing to add to that is, you know, sometimes we go out and we get funding and we don't even know the process of the funding that we're obtaining and which type of funding is best suited for our needs. Sometimes we, you know, we're able to get funding and we're just placed in any type of vehicle. So I'm super excited that we have Martina joining us this evening, because she truly will help us to begin to understand that whole process of what. Pardon me.
So I'm going to take over. Minister Ladon may have some challenges going there, but she definitely, our special guest, Martina Perkins. She is a senior residential loan originator. So we're going to go ahead without further ado. We're going to introduce to some and present to others. Martina, are you in the studio on tonight?
I am. Hello. How are you, Coach D?
I am great. Welcome to Woman to Woman. We are so honored to have you in the studio tonight, and we're so excited about the information that you're going to be providing to us as well as our listening audience on tonight. So what I would like to do, because I know you, of course, and it's just been a joy working with you, because, of course, you were my lender. And so I did learn quite a bit of things. And I would say there was moments of frustration, very few, but for the most part, it went smooth. And so it was a pleasure to work with you and your team. So could you just kind of introduce Martina to us? Who is Martina?
Okay. Well, congratulations first on your home purchase. So I'm excited for that.
And
you're welcome. So Martina, I am a mother of two boys. I'm a wife. And I, as a career path, I am a mortgage loan officer, as you stated. So I'm very excited to be here. I'm thankful to be on your show when you were explaining to me what the show is about and how you all try to reach the community. That's very important to me. So I'm big about helping people, and this just fits. So I'm glad to be here, and that's a little about me.
Awesome. Well, we're glad, again, we're glad to have you, and we are excited for the information that you're going to be sharing on tonight. So what I would like to start off with is we know that, I'm going to be ignorant on this show because I want to be ignorant because I want to be able to ask the right questions. Now, I've purchased a few homes, and each time I purchase a home, I learn something new because either laws change quickly, or either there was just from state to state, things could vary. So what I want to do is I'm going to act like I don't know anything. And so I want to, I wanted to mention that we also had LaTanya last week, and she was sharing it from a real estate point of view, you know, from being a real estate agent, she was sharing it from her perspective. So tonight we got the real estate perspective on last Wednesday. So this Wednesday we want to get the perspective from a lender. So I want to buy a home. I want to buy a home. What is the first things that I need to know before I even come to a lender?
Contact the. So the first the. And here's how a lot of people do it. Like you mentioned in the intro, most people will go and start to look for homes and then find one that they want, and then they will, you know, contact a real estate agent, contact a lender, and things like that. The realtor will put them in contact with a lender. The very first thing you should do when you even begin to think about purchasing a home is get your financial picture together. Get your income in order. You need to so there's a couple of things that you need to have in order to qualify for a home. So you want to start to look at, what does your job, your work history, what does that look like? You have to have a job for 2 years in order to qualify. Now, there are some caveats where maybe if you are newly out of school, there are some programs where you can qualify if you show your transcripts from college and then you have an offer letter that you've accepted from an employer. So there are some caveats to that if you're newly out of school that you can qualify. But primarily, if you've been out in corporate or in the industry in the work field for any period of time, you want to have 2 years of work history. You want to look at your income. So, of course, credit is a big piece of it, and a lot of people think that credit is the end all be all, but credit is a portion of it. So you want to have your credit in order. When I say credit in order, you want to have, depending on your loan program, you want to have at minimum 580. I typically ask you to have at least a 600 credit score, and that's on the low end. So when you have a lower credit score, then you're going to get your rates and terms are going to be worse, meaning you're going to get the higher interest rates. You know, you're going to be limited on which loan programs you can use, et cetera. So work history, credits, you want to look at your assets. What do you have anything saved? Do you have the money to go out? Because even using specialty programs or down payment assistance type programs, those programs only come into play when you are actually at closing. So before that, you have to pay for an inspection and an appraisal and your earnest money and so forth. So you need to have some funds saved to even get the process started. So you want to look at your assets. You want to look at credit. You want to look at work history. And then your debt-to-income ratio. So what bills are on your credit report? So do you have a car payment and student loans and, you know, all these other things that are going to blow your debt-to-income ratio way over the qualifiable limit? So depending on the loan program, you want to keep the new house payment plus all your other bills on your credit report under 50 to 55% is usually rule of thumb for most programs. So you can look at all those things and have those things in order before you even start to contact somebody. Or if you're confused about it, when you do reach out to a lender, maybe go through all of those pieces and understand, hey, I like to purchase in 2 or 3 months. Can you please help? You know, let's do a financial analysis. Let's work up a couple scenarios and let's see what makes sense so that when I am ready to actually make the move or when my lease is up or whatever that looks like, you're ready to move, then you know what actions you need to take to be fully prepared.
Awesome. So mm-hmm. I'm just going to go on the list, but this helps because I'm going to ask a little bit. I'm going to take each portion of this list that you gave us and just go a little bit deeper. So you said first,
okay,
we employment history. Second, yes, is credit. So that credit people is your FICO score. Your FICO score is the score. I'm gonna ask you to. I'm gonna go down. But so second is credit. Third is assets, and fourth is debt. So those are gonna be the four key things we're gonna focus on tonight. So again, that's employment history, credit, assets, and debt. I love it. Ooh, I'm getting excited. So you already went a little detail about employment history. So you're mm-hmm. saying that it has to be 2 years verifiable employment. Now, I'm going to bring this up because a lot of people don't know this. So
okay.
I have 2 years verifiable employment history. However, I have 6 months here, but I went straight in from 6 months there to 6 months here, and then I got about 8 months over here, and I got 3 months over here, but it all collectively goes to 2 years or over. Is that an issue?
That's not going to be an issue. The only thing that you might run into is and I don't know the number of job changes that it would have to be for an underwriter not to. So here's another thing that you need to know about the process. So as loan originators or loan officers, we kind of almost represent you the same as you would if you got a lawyer. But then there's going to be that person that actually signs off and approves the loan, and that person is the underwriter, and they are kind of like the judge. They ultimately make the final decision on whether this is a qualifiable loan or an approvable loan or not. So we try to help you as best we can to structure your file and structure your loan application where you have the highest chance of, you know, no issues with the underwriter. So there's no dead set number of job changes. I personally haven't had where job changes have mattered. The only thing you want to keep in mind is that you will need to have at least 30, you'll either need to have 30 days on the new job and have a pay stub to show the new employment history, or there's some programs that will allow you to just have an accepted offer letter from the new employer. So if you're in the process of changing jobs while you're going through the process, you'll have an accepted offer letter from the new job, and then you may only have to just get one pay statement from that job. So it just depends on the program. And when I say program, that's meaning if you go FHA, conventional, VA, USDA, or so forth.
Okay, so I'm going
to ask the question. To answer your question, Coach D, typically no. That's not an issue to change employers.
Okay, so even if, does that mean staying within the same career path, or can you jump around? Like, you know, this week I was a cosmetologist. Last year I was.
We like to see where you stayed in the same industry. And again, you know, some loan programs and some underwriters are more sticklers for, you know, changing career paths. So I would say as a rule of thumb, you want to stay in the same industry. I mean, like you said, you don't want to go from being a cosmetologist to a police officer to a, you know, an accountant to, you know, that's you can't be all over across the board. But I've had several people that, you know, have gone from, you know, one industry to maybe they go to be a teacher, you know, but it's something similar, or maybe they were in the military and they did, you know, electronics engineering in the military, and now they come out into private sector and they do the same type of thing. So it's not the military, but it's the same type of work, or they were a paralegal, you know what I mean? So typically, yes, you want to stay in the same industry, even if it's not the same employer.
Okay, awesome. Minister LaDon, did you have any questions in regards to the employment portion?
Not at this moment. Thank you.
Okay. So we're going to now we got to the employment portion. And so now this one is probably going to be a little bit more detail, I know. That credit thing. What is a FICO score? Believe it or not, we just feel like FICO scores is common knowledge, but believe it or not, there are a lot of people that either don't know what a FICO score is, or they don't understand the importance of it, or they just don't know. You know, I just want to make sure that I'm asking the questions, because I want to just act like I'm ignorant to everything.
Right.
What is a FICO score and why is it important?
So your FICO score is your, what is it, Fair Isaac Credit, I don't know if it's organization, I don't know what the O is, but FICO score is basically what creditors use to determine your credit worthiness. So the credit bureau, so they will pretty much administer a score, or assign a score to you as a, you know, as a, with your Social Security number. They will assign a score or attribute a score to your Social Security number from three different bureaus. The major bureaus are going to be Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And so what they do is they take your credit history and they have all kind of scoring models. So depending on what you're having your credit pulled for, that's going to determine which algorithm is used or which scoring model is used to calculate that number. So, for example, if you pull your own credit score, that's a consumer score, and most times that score is going to be a little bit higher than what I would pull, because when you pull it yourself, even though it's not a hard inquiry, so it doesn't impact your scores as being a credit inquiry per se, what they use is pretty much the algorithm is going to be based off like the last 2 years of all your credit history. Okay. If you go and purchase a car, the auto creditors, when they pull credit for an auto loan, is primarily the last 2 years, but it's heavily weighted on any auto history that you have. So if you haven't, you might have all good trade lines on your credit, but if you don't have any auto loans or have never had a car in your name, then that's going to impact your auto score. For mortgage, most mortgage lenders or mortgage bankers, we use what's called the Fannie Mae 3.2 scoring model. And with the Fannie Mae scoring model, it takes into consideration your full history of the full life of your credit. So from the very moment when you started to obtain credit, most people, you know, start getting credit cards or some form of credit at 18, student loans or something at 18. So for the full history of your credit, that mortgage algorithm is based off the full life of your credit history, and it's heavily weighted on mortgage history. So when we pull all three bureaus, and then we use the middle score. So if you have, let's just say from all three bureaus, you have a 650, a 675, and a 720, then that 675 is going to be what we use as your FICO score for a mortgage application. Does that answer?
Okay. Yes, it does. It does. That's good to know. So so the FICO score is going to show the credit worthiness. And you did say early on in the show that you normally require or ask for a 600. And then you went on to say even if they have the 600, they could qualify for a home potentially. But then there are some other things that the lower your score, there are some things that you are going to be subjected to. Could you get a little bit more detail into that?
So the we call them government loans, the FHA loans and VA loans, USDA, or not USDA, VA and FHA, they will typically allow, they're more lenient with respect to credit. So they will allow lower FICO scores, and different blemishes on credit don't impact your approvability or eligibility as much on those type of loans. With these are agency loans, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, those are conventional loans. Those loans are going to be more strict with respect to credit, and you have to have at least a 620 to qualify for those. And what I meant by, different, they'll have impact on your rates and terms, meaning that there's tiers to it, right? So if you have maybe the best possible interest rate right now is a 4.75. So the person that comes in and this person has a 750 credit score, they would get that 4.75. Whereas the person who comes in with just barely meeting requirements at a 600, that person may take a hit to their rate. So they may get a 5.5 or something interest rate. For mortgage insurance premium. So there's a mortgage insurance premium that you pay, which is what the lenders basically, they have an insurance to protect them when they lend you money in case you default. For FHA, that's a fixed amount. VA doesn't have it. But for FHA, that's a fixed amount. So 0.85% monthly of your loan amount goes to mortgage insurance on FHA. Well, with conventional, that is determined. That can be lower than 0.85% or it can be higher. So if your credit score is low and you get a conventional loan, you might be paying versus the 0.85% that FHA pays, you might be paying 1.5% of your monthly payment, maybe going to mortgage insurance premium just because your credit scores are lower.
Wow. You just said something that triggered a question. Because you said on the FHA, PMI, so PMI is mortgage insurance when you don't meet the 20%. Is that correct? Is the 20% down of the purchase price? So in order to alleviate the mortgage insurance, you have to put that 20% down of the purchase price. So,
and let me add this, Coach D. There's some programs where they'll say that there's no PMI. So there's some programs out here now that people are touting, some mortgage bankers and mortgage brokers are touting saying there's no PMI. What it is lender paid. So what they do is the lender will pay your PMI, but, again, there's no such thing as free money. So if they're not charging you that PMI and they're saying it's lender paid, you're getting a higher rate.
Okay. Oh, I'm glad you said that because I'm learning that there's I don't want to use the word trick. I don't want to use the word trick. So what I want to say is that there are marketing techniques that make things look a lot more pleasing to the eye. But if you don't understand the small print or the dotted lines, you could really – I think we had that experience when the market dropped and a lot of people lost their homes because they wanted to say that they were tricked, but they really weren't tricked. They were explained early on, your mortgage is going to be a lot lower, but the suggestion is that if your mortgage was supposed to be $2,000 and you're now only paying $1,200, the suggestion was is that you put that $800 somewhere and begin to earn money off of it so that when that 5 years came that you would have the money that you would need when that premium, when that mortgage payment was going to go up. But people didn't hear that. All they heard was, I could get this $500,000 home for $1,200 a month.
$1,200, that's right. That's right.
I love that you said that because a lot of times when people are selling products, sometimes they do. They fail to say in detail because they're trying to sell. If I don't sell, I don't.
That's
but
right.
You said there's no free money.
That's
and
right.
That's
you
one.
Pay somewhere. So when I learned this as a little girl, when something looks too good to be true, it probably is. So you always have to be looking for, I always ask people, when something, we'll give you this and we'll do it. And I'm like, okay, well, how are you getting paid? You know what I mean? Well, where are you benefiting from this? Because, surely you aren't doing all of this. You don't even know me. You know what I mean? You're not doing all this because you just like me or I'm a nice person. You guys are benefiting from this somewhere. Where is that? I see where I'm benefiting from it. Then where do you benefit? Which is not always a bad thing. It's okay. But just make sure that you fully understand where everybody is benefiting from it. And I think that's human nature is to, I want to do what looks like to be the best deal for me. But, once you understand fully what the ramifications and what the impact is, then I think you can make a better choice and an educated decision.
That leads me to a question, because what about the person who may qualify for, a large amount as far as lending resources. Have you ever had to steer them in a different direction based on their income versus what they qualify for?
Steer them in a different direction based off income versus what they qualify for.
Exactly. Sometimes kind of relating it to when people get are going out for a new car and they may qualify for, a large amount of money or a large loan, but they really, in order to master being able to pay it, they really should take a smaller loan or.
Oh,
exactly.
Yes. I fully understand. So what I explain is here's what the math says you can qualify for, and I break it down, and I, you know, try to put it in layman's terms and say, I don't know what your grocery bill is. I don't know what your gas, how much you spend on gas. I don't know your daycare bill. You know what I mean? So only you know that. So, you know, as a rule of thumb, we say you should keep your total expenses under 50% to 55%. Now, I'm only going to be able to put into this calculation what I'm able to pull off your credit report, but you should look at all of your expenses and try to keep those numbers under 55%, right? Because you never want to have all of your income going to pay bills. That's just a miserable life, right? So
right.
I will guide a person, say, here's what you can qualify for, but what are you most comfortable with as far as a payment? And then we can work backwards from there, right? What do you feel most comfortable with saying, okay, well, this much of my income is going to go to a housing expense? And there's a housing ratio also. So we have a total debt to income ratio, and then there's a housing ratio, which usually we want to keep that under 30-35%. I mean, I've seen some go as high as 40% depending on other credit factors, but there's a housing ratio too. So, you know, 30% typically is a good rule of thumb. All your, you know, principal and interest, taxes, insurance, PMI, all these things, the housing expense total shouldn't be any more than about 30% of your monthly income.
Thank you.
So to answer your question, Minister LaDon, yes. Yeah, I do that all the time.
It definitely does. It definitely does, because I think sometimes people get so excited,
mm-hmm.
and then they, when they find out, oh, I qualify for this, sometimes they go
mm-hmm.
out and get too much house,
too much
and
house.
Then by the mm-hmm. time you invest all of this money and this time and opportunity, they can
mm-hmm.
set themselves up for sabotage, basically.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's an emotional process, right? I mean, a house is probably going to be one of the largest expenses any family makes, right, in a lifetime. So you go out and you're looking at these big, beautiful houses, and it's all, you know, big and pretty and shiny, and you kind of forget about, like I'm saying, you know, how much you spend on gas every month, or, you know, how much the kids' daycare is and things like that. You're like, okay, well, we can make it work, but now you house poor. And that's all you can do is, you know, I hope you really like the house, because that's all you're going to be able to do is sit in it. You know.
Well, I like that house for. Woo! Now, I'm going to ask a question, because you had mentioned something, and I want to make sure I understand, because we went from the credit portion to the asset, because really when you start talking about, or not to the asset, we kind of skipped over to debt to income when you spoke about,
mm-hmm.
and you were saying that it shouldn't be more than 30% of your monthly income. And what was that including? That 30% was including.
That 30% is your total housing expense. So anything with respect to that new house is going to go on interest. It's going to include your homeowner's insurance. It's going to include property taxes. PMI or MIP, which is the mortgage insurance premium. And then if you have a homeowners association, the HOA is also included in that. So those
okay,
things
so,
combined should not exceed, I mean, as a rule of thumb, 30, you know, 32-ish percent of your gross monthly income.
Okay, wow. And we know that doesn't happen often for most people.
No, that's very conservative. Yeah, that's very conservative. I mean, like I said, I've seen them go to 40, 42, you know. I mean, I've seen them get up there and still be approvable. Like, we can still get it done in some cases. But, you know, I think that's the Fannie standard is 30%, something like that. That's where it should be.
All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we went through credit, and then we kind of skipped a little bit to debt to income ratio, but I want to go back up to assets.
Okay.
I want to go to assets, and you can speak more in terms of it, because I had an experience. And even though I said that this is, you know, not my first home purchase, but I just I generally use some of the, I mean, the FHA, you know, at least they have a lot of, you know, buyer programs, first-time homeowners, and different,
right.
just different types of programs. So it really kind of helps cushion some of the
impact,
the closing costs and stuff that you have to come up with. One of the things I really seemed like I was a lot more conscientious in this last purchase is I did not realize all the financial things that we're not talking about just at closing. We're talking about things you have to pay before closing. You already got an expense at closing, you know, with title and all that, and we'll help you break that down. But like you said, if you don't have a saving, we're not just talking about the earnest money, you know, putting down the 10% of the sale price, and you could get into that. But we got earnest money. We got, depending on what state you're in the state of Texas, for example, you got option money. Then you have appraisal. Then you have inspection. This is all stuff that comes out of your pocket before closing.
Before you ever get the closing. That's right.
Yes.
Sorry to cut you off.
Can you give us a breakdown of before closing costs? I mean, I know that could vary. And then after closing, I mean, you know, when you first talk about getting a home in the first week, there's some expenses that you got to come out your pocket with.
Yes, yes. So first, I want to go back a little bit to, you touched on down payment assistance programs, and I probably explain this like 2 to 3 times a day. So I like to share this with the listeners. Down payment assistance. Everybody wants down payment assistance. You know, I'm a first-time home buyer. I want your first-time home buyer program, so down payment assistance program. It's the same thing that I was describing earlier about there being a cost to everything. So what I like to explain to people is, if you get a down payment assistance program, most times, and I'm not going to say 100%, maybe there's some specialty programs, I don't want the listeners to, you know, chime in, oh, well, mine was this, you know. So I'm going to say most times those programs will have a fixed interest rate, and that interest rate will be high. So if, let's just say, par is, you know, 4.75 or 5, then they charge you 6.5% interest rate to give you 2 to 3% towards your closing costs. So if you're purchasing a $200,000 home, they're going to give you $4,000 towards your closing costs, but you're paying 1.5% higher interest, so you may be paying $150 more a month. Well, over 360 months, that's costing you tens of thousands of dollars more over the life of the loan. So, you know, you're getting something in that you're not paying or having to come to closing with as much capital, but you're losing over the life of the loan because you're paying so much more in interest. Be mindful, again, of what it is that you're getting and what it is that you're giving up to get that, anytime you get into any of those type of any program, you know, understand what it is that you're getting. Now, you were talking about what it is that you have to pay before closing. So even if you get into a program where maybe you only have to have $1,000 into the transaction or something very minimal into the transaction because you're getting some type of assistance in the end, in, let's say, our market, I don't know if it's all states, but in Texas, your earnest money is typically going to be 1% or more. So 1% is a rule of thumb for what you want to put down for earnest money. So on a $200,000 house, you can expect to pay $2,000. And that earnest money is what you spend when you place the offer on the house and your offer is accepted. So that tells the seller that you are serious about purchasing their home, that you're going to give them $2,000. You don't give it to them. You give it to the title company. But you're going to put up this earnest money, this $2,000 or 1% of the purchase price, and that just says, hey, I'm serious about purchasing your home. You can go ahead and take it off the market with confidence that I'm going to purchase. There's also the option fee, And the option fee is usually maybe $100, $200. The earnest money. In a competitive market such as our market has been very competitive for the last, couple years now. Sometimes to get an offer accepted, the realtors will have you put up more earnest money. So they'll have you put up more than 1% because it makes your offer more appealing to the sellers. So you want to be prepared to have that. You want to have, $100, $200 in option money. And what that is you're saying, okay, I'll put this earnest money up. And the earnest money is supposed to be that you get it credited back to you, or, you see it as a credit when you get ready to close. But if you walk away from that deal and decide you don't want to purchase that home, then the sellers are, in theory, supposed to be able to keep your earnest money. Now, that's the reason for the option fee, is because you'll give them $100 to $200, and that's non-refundable. And that's for the option to say, okay, I'm going to put this offer on your home today, and if you give me ten days, business days, to have time to get an inspection on the home, or just basically make my mind up and decide if I really do want to purchase it. And if I don't want to purchase it, then I have the option to walk away and get my earnest money back. Okay, that's option money. You also at closing will get credited that back also if you complete the transaction. The inspection. So the inspection is optional. You don't have to get an inspection on your home. It's highly, highly, highly advised to get an inspection on your home. Like, I don't know any realtor that won't, that will allow you not to get an inspection on your home, just because the inspectors go through and they tell you everything that's, wrong or right with this particular home. So basically you learn everything that the seller may or may not disclose to you. You learn from the inspector, and you can make that decision on if it's things that you can live with or things that you can fix on your own, or if it's things that you want to have the seller to repair before you purchase, or maybe you just want the sellers to give you a credit that you're going to have to spend this kind of money soon. If the inspector says, hey, this is going to fail, within a couple of months, then maybe you just have the sellers to give you a credit for it. And then there's the appraisal. And the appraisal is required. That is, so the inspections usually are about, $300 or something like that. The appraisal is going to be about $500 or so. And that is required. And that is for the lender. So that's for us to have the appraisers to go out and actually assess the true value of the home. So just because the seller is asking for $200,000 doesn't mean that the house is worth that. So we will have the appraiser go out and actually appraise the home, make sure the home is worth what you're paying for it. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. If it isn't, then you can go back to the seller and say, hey, your house isn't worth $200,000. They say it's only worth, $195,000. I just only want to pay that. Or you can pay the difference, but the lender will not lend you more for a home than what it's worth. So all of those expenses are actually paid before you get to closing. And then once you get to closing, then you have a whole nother set of, your down payment and your closing costs and all that is covered at the actual closing table.
Martina, quick question. On the estimated money needed prior to closing, you had mentioned, of course, the earnest money, option money, inspection fee, appraisal fee, but then another step further is if you're in a community like a townhome and or a community that requires a HOA.
Yes. Yes. So those.
Go ahead. That.
So typically those will be covered at closing, in the condos it's different. So in the condos, you have to pay, I can't remember what the name of that fee is, but there's a fee that you have to pay up front where they do a search to see if it's warrantable or non-warrantable and all of that. So condos are a little bit different, but just HOAs, those will be covered at closing.
Okay.
To transfer the HOA.
Awesome.
So in regards,
I mentioned that because I had a townhome, and and I had a townhome that was in a PUD. So even prior to the transfer fees that they normally mm-hmm. charge, like towards the end, prior to mm-hmm. then, there was I ended up spending like literally between the two over like probably close to $600 because in order to get, I think you had to get the seller in this case, the seller mm-hmm. has to provide the buyer with the CCRs or something, and they literally charge mm-hmm. you like anywhere from 200, well, it could vary, I guess, from anywhere from like $200, $300 just to pull those CCRs to give to the buyer.
Okay.
And
so there you go, another $200 or $300 more you can add to that then if you're talking about something
yeah.
that's in a PUD. So yeah, so just add
it. Not to mention the stuff you have to fix when the inspector comes. Okay,
exactly. I mean, and the point, no, because I like where you're going with that, because the point is, you know, you can't go into it on the skin of your teeth. Like, you have to prepare yourself and save up some assets. You know, you would be surprised at, you know, the number of people that are so caught off guard by, they didn't realize that they had to have, you know, they think, okay, well, I'll have it by the time we get to closing, right? And it's like, no, there's so much that gets spent before you actually even get to the closing table. So, yeah, I like that.
Awesome. Okay, so we dealt with the employment, we dealt with the credit worthiness, we dealt with assets just now that you can't go talking about you want to buy a house. I mean, you know, I understand that faith, you know, that faith walk is something.
Right.
I literally went and purchased or got ready to purchase a home with no money. This was
mm-hmm.
many moons ago. I paid $75,000 mm-hmm. for a house, and I just went and just was believing in faith. But we know reality is you have to have this money, and you have to have money to be able to start to work with when you're
right.
talking about purchasing a home. We talked about the debt-to-income ratio.
Mm-hmm.
That was the fourth and last, and we were talking about, of course, you know, you want to be at 30-32%, and that's very
mm-hmm.
conservative of your monthly income when you start talking about your, and that's principal, interest, tax, and insurance. And when you talk about insurance,
mm-hmm.
insurance could include homeowners insurance as well as mortgage insurance if you did not.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just explain a little bit? God, this is such good information, and I know we're getting towards the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Help people understand. You did explain that mortgage insurance is the insurance that we are required to pay for the as a protection to the lender when we don't put down 20% of the sale price. That is totally, and I just want to make sure people listen, is that your mortgage insurance is totally different than your homeowner's insurance. So when we hear people
mm-hmm.
use the term PITI,
right,
what is that last I? Is that last I mortgage insurance, or is that last I homeowner's insurance, or is it a combination of the two?
No, it's homeowner's insurance typically. So principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And usually your mortgage insurance is not, so that's going to be inclusive your whole payment. So if you have mortgage insurance, then yes, that's included in it. And so I guess it's both. Homeowners and mortgage insurance. But like you said, everybody doesn't have mortgage insurance. So VA doesn't have it at all. Conventional doesn't have it after you have 20% equity into the home.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we must have 20% equity into the home in order to eliminate mortgage insurance. And for those
mm-hmm.
who are listening in, if you're talking about your payment, principal, interest, tax, and insurance, eliminating mortgage insurance could literally drop your payment anywhere, and you could correct me, Martina, if I'm not correct. It could literally drop your payment $300 to $500.
Absolutely. I mean, if you're buying, so when you look at a conforming loan, so $450,000 is the maximum loan amount, or 451 actually is the conforming loan limit. So if you have the conforming loan limit and your credit score is low and you have a PMI of 1 to 1.5% of that 450, right, it can save you $600 by not having mortgage insurance premium. So being able to either put that 20% down, or once you get 20% equity into the property, then you can have it removed. But yeah, it can drop your payment, you know, it can lower your payment by up to $600, depending on your loan amount. So it's very significant, you know what I mean? And that's why I try to say, you know, the better you can prepare yourself and get your credit in order, and the more you can put in and have assets. And then here's another thing I'd like to share with mortgages. Mortgages are front-loaded, meaning that you pay a lot of interest in the very beginning. And so I always advise my buyers, if you can, make one extra mortgage payment, one extra house payment a year on a 30-year fixed rate, and you will shave 8 years off of that mortgage. So you can pay that loan off in 2 years. Yeah.
Well, say that again. Listen,
if you make one extra house payment, so just one a year, so whenever you get a bonus or if you get an income tax refund or something like that, just make one extra house payment. If your house payment is $1,500 a month, then one of those months you make an extra house payment straight to principal. If you do that every year, you will shave 8 years off of a 30-year mortgage. So you're paying that mortgage off in 22 years versus the 30 years just because you applied a lot of capital towards your principal up front. And by them being so front-loaded, you saved yourself a lot on interest on the back. So that's a key. Yeah, that's a key that I love to share that with my buyers. I think that's huge to keep that in mind. And then two, I know we're running out of time, Coach G, but I also wanted to share that it's proven that, I mean, it's statistics and all kind of studies and research done that home ownership has more than a financial impact. So it's great financially, but it has a social and emotional impact, positive impact on families. So they've seen where it improves, you know, just the overall well-being of families, children in schools where they know they have that stability. They're not going to be moving around from apartment to apartment, going to different schools and so forth. It has a lot of social impact. So, you know, if you don't own a home, definitely is something to look into. Not that homeownership is for everybody. I do think there are some, you know, people that are not at a place where they're ready to purchase, or maybe they're considering moving around or just at a different place in their life. But I think that homeownership is, you know, for the most part, it's a good decision. And people say, well, what's the right time to purchase? If you're paying somebody else's rent or somebody else's mortgage, it's probably a good time to purchase your own.
You know, Martina, one of the things I want to ask you, for those people who don't, you know, haven't started saving or anything like that, what are some ways to get started in that process to help set them up or prepare them to have the money set aside in order for, you know, all the costs, the associated costs, and, of course, having extra you know, just an extra little umbrella for a rainy day. What are some suggested ways that you would tell people to start saving?
So I would say, you know, I really like, there's a couple financial planners, financial experts, I guess, that talk about basically setting up your rainy day fund and having about $1,000 as an emergency fund before you start to even look at investing or making large purchases or anything. And I think that's a good idea because you, when you have that emergency fund, it keeps you from building up any debt. When something arises, you can kind of take care of it. So I think starting there and being able to be disciplined enough to set even that small of an amount aside, you know, that's a start. And then snowball the, so they call it snowballing, but just eliminating as much debt as possible. A lot of people, it's not necessarily that they don't have the resources to save, it's that they don't have their priorities in order. So, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities, I think, where you can look at your day-to-day activities and find a couple of dollars here or there. Whereas if you set that priority and it's like, okay, well, I'm not going to do this, or I'm only going to eat out this many days, or I'm only going to spend this much on, you know, any discretionary activities or, you know, recreational activities or whatnot, you'll find the resources to be able to sock something away. Most importantly, you want to know your numbers. So talk to somebody, you know, work with I always am helping people put together action plans. So they'll say, okay, Martina, I'm not looking to purchase until school's out. Well, right now, school just got in. So now we got 9 months to basically get you in shape and get you prepared to make that purchase. And we'll come up with an action plan. Okay, this is about how much you're going to need. Okay, so what? And then we just work backwards. Right? How much can you save a month? What does that look like? How much are your monthly payments going to be? Maybe you start to pretend you're already making those monthly payments. That way you can get comfortable with making those payments. Maybe your rent right now is $800. Your house payment is going to be $1,400. Let's start going ahead and pretending like you're making that $1,400 payment and just putting that extra, that difference into savings. You know, now we got you comfortable with making those payments. And two, we save these additional funds to be prepared for closing.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
That's very
awesome. That's just good information. So much good information. I know we are getting close, but gosh, I got to ask another question.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so that was good information. So we had earlier talked about, right prior to this, we talked about the estimated money needed prior to closing. So we established that there is some money that's needed. Can you just briefly, I mean, just not without going into a lot of detail, but just briefly,
okay,
what are closing costs? When, you know, when we hear that, because everybody hears that, everybody knows you got to have closing costs, or, you know, sometimes you hear seller pay closing costs or whatever. What are closing costs? What does that consist of?
Okay, so real quick. So cash to close is going to be your down payment and closing costs. Closing costs include title fees, so what the title company will charge to, you know, make sure the title is clean. There's fees to register, doc preparation, just the fees associated with processing your transferring your deed, all of that. Then there's also going to be lender's fees. So we have to pay our staff, right? So we have an underwriting fee, a processing fee. Some lenders will actually charge an origination fee. I don't charge that. And you can, there's a possibility if you want to buy down your interest rate. So maybe your credit is not so great and you get a higher interest rate and you want to buy it down, you can pay discount points. Those are closing costs. And then lastly, it's prepaid items. So, you know, you want to set up an escrow account. Homeowners insurance, they charge you 1 year in advance. So you'll pay, when you get ready to close, you'll pay 12 months of your homeowners insurance, and then you'll set up your escrow account. So it'll be 2 to 3 months of insurance and 2 to 3 months of taxes. And what that does is that sets up that escrow account so where there's always going to be a couple of months sitting in that account so that when your bill is due, when your homeowner's insurance bill, your annual bill, or your annual tax bill comes due, your lender can pay it. So there's always money in there for them to be able to make that monthly payment. To make that annual payment. So closing costs will be title fees, lender fees, and prepaid items.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And those usually will come to about maybe 3% or so. It just depends on the purchase price of the home, but you can usually count on those being 2.5%, 3%, 3.5%.
Okay, and you said the prepaid fees are homeowner fees, taxes.
Homeowners insurance and taxes, pretty much.
Okay, homeowners insurance and taxes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry, I'm taking notes on this because we like to For people who are listening in, sometimes they didn't come prepared to take notes, so a lot of times we may post certain things on our webpage okay. for people to get the information. Okay. Wow, so we went over you listening in on tonight, awesome information. If you missed the show, we will, it is recorded so you can listen to it at a later time, but you really, if you did not listen, you really missed out on some really pertinent information. Items. I think what I would like to do just before we go any further, because we are coming towards the end, if there is anyone listening in on tonight and you have any questions or comments about the contents of tonight's show, please dial 1 on your dial pad. That will let our team know that you have a question or comment, and we will bring you in. Again, if you have a question or comment about any of the contents of tonight's show, if you have a question for our guests, please dial 1 on your dial pad. That will let our team know that you have a question or comment and we can bring you in. You don't have to introduce yourself if you don't want to. I know some people are pretty shy about speaking into a large audience. If you don't have any question or comments, I'm sorry, then we will continue to get ready to close out the show, but we just want to give you an opportunity. If you do, if you don't want to ask your question here, always feel free to email us at w@mcdnetwork.org. Again, that's w@mcdnetwork.org. We thank you for tuning in on tonight's show. Minister LaDon, did you have any other questions or comments?
Well, I just want to thank Martina, of course, because tonight's show was very, very informative. I hope that our listeners are taking advantage of the resource that Martina is. Please make sure that you give out your information, Martina, in case anyone would like to contact you directly and set themselves up for owning a home. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And we just want to thank our listening audience for tuning in to tonight's show, this episode of Woman to Woman, with our special guest, senior loan originator, Martina Perkins. And this has been an extraordinary show. Again, we want to thank you for tuning in. And please feel free to tune in weekly on Tuesdays with Cheek to Cheek, which is a support group for people who have lost loved ones, helping you to learn to cope with that loss. Again, that's on Tuesdays, Cheek to Cheek with Minister Tamika Dallas Cruz at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 9 p.m. Central Daylight Time. I'm saying Standard Daylight Time. And then again on Wednesdays, we have Woman to Woman, and we're bringing you relevant information. We're giving you tools and resources to help you to become a better you, living your best life. And then on Thursday nights, tune in at 7 p.m. to Processing the Pain with yours truly, Coach D. And we are helping you to process through life's pain, pursue purpose in order to partake in the promises that have already been established for you from the foundation of the earth. Again, we thank you for tuning in. Know that you are truly loved and appreciated. Martina and LaDon, if you'll stay on.
Songs of love and songs of joy, songs of light we bring.
Here we go.
Woman to woman, songs of light we sing. Songs of love and songs of joy, songs of light we bring.
Sing it again. Woman to
woman,
woman, songs of life we bring, songs of love and songs of joy. Woman to woman, yeah.
Okay, Kayla, sing it down low for him.
Ha ha ha.